No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. After a two-week holiday hiatus, and we are here for the all-Cardinals shows. We enter week 17 of the NFL season, and in the 2 weeks in which we've been out, the Cardinals have not only beaten the Philadelphia Eagles 40-17, they also defeated the Green Bay Packers 38-8, both in dominating fashion, and have earned not only the division championship for the NFC West, but also have guaranteed at least the number two seed and a first-round playoff bye. So, we've got Seth Cox on the line. Seth, how are you doing after your holiday? We're not quite done with the holidays as we're recording a couple days shy of New Year's Eve. How has your holiday been so far?
It's been good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing great, especially the fact that we've got Cardinals wins to talk about. The Cardinals continue to roll. The Cardinals continue to roll right now, considering, you know, we looked at that first half of the season and we looked with trepidation to the second half, and they've done nothing but win. They've won game after game. They won on the road, and they started off their NFC West road schedule. They swept those. They beat all the playoff teams. They've done everything that we could think that we could have hoped that they would have done. They've won close. In essence, they've kind of dominated every single game at some point. Some they let back in, but I mean, at this point of the season, have we ever seen a better Cardinals season? I have to say, absolutely not. This is the best Cardinals team we've ever seen, ever. Unless, if you look back to, for people who can remember the 75 Cardinals team, which was really, really good, but didn't get the job done. I can't even think of any other. I mean, even the Super Bowl team, there's nothing as good as this team.
No, I mean, I think you can say it's the best regular season team that has ever been produced. And I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago, basically that all that's left of this team and, Carson Palmer and all of this, to cement the, greatest team ever is they the playoffs. They can't really prove much more than what they've done so far. So, it's interesting to me, all the records and stuff that are being broken. But I think now it's just a matter of, can they finish it out and, how far can they go?
So let's start talking about what stood out the last couple of weeks for you. What have been the things that have stood out the most, both good and bad, over the wins that the Cardinals had over Philadelphia and also Green Bay?
I think the first thing that stands out is how dominant the defense has been. Obviously the Eagles' offense has not been particularly effective all year, but they still have some weapons, and I think you have to be happy with what they were able to do in order to shut them down. And then in terms of the Green Bay game, I don't think you could have asked for a better all-around game than what they played that game, and the results, obviously, defensively. The offense wasn't even really needed in that game much, and so they produced just enough offense to go along with fantastic defense, and really have shown that maybe outside of some hiccups, they probably should be considered the best defense in the NFL, especially when they rush the passer like they did the last game against Green Bay.
That was a party. That was a sack party. I mean, when you're getting Kareem Martin involved, Dwight Freeney, the cadaver of Dwight Freeney's picking up three sacks in a game, that's really, really something. For me, there have been two players in particular that really stand out, both on the offensive side of the ball, everyone in the nation, it seems, is talking about rookie David Johnson, and with good reason. Obviously, he has been everything that anyone hoped he would be. And it seems almost crazy that he wasn't starting for the first half of the season, but there wasn't any need to because they had Chris Johnson, who was playing very well. The other guy is Michael Floyd. We have never seen a more consistent Floyd over a 4, 5, 6, 7 game stretch. If you look at he has been, and it's coming kind of at an odd time if you want to think about it, but he's healthy. But if you look over his last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games, he's got 5 games of over 100, 5 games of over 100 yards. One game, and when he was quiet, it was the San Francisco game. He went 1 catch for 14 yards. But even the other quiet game was 5 for 70. So he's in this year, aside from the early start to the season when she was coming back from his hand injury, at 833 yards, it would take a massive game on Sunday. But he has a chance to be have a 1,000-yard year. And I'm liking the way he's doing it because he's being aggressive in all phases of the game. So you look at David Johnson, who has just been a revelation. I think, he's got that pass-catching ability. I keep thinking, this is what the Cardinals wanted Andre Elling to do entering last season. And David Johnson is better at it because he's bigger. And there's a little bit of concern. I mean, there's fans a little worried about the fact he didn't play much in the second half. The trainer was looking at his knee. I see, obviously, he is a tad dinged up. It hasn't been enough for him to miss any practice time. But they're just taking care of him. But they're also having him be tough and play through things. As he kind of saw that he got his knee dinged up after that near touchdown against Minnesota.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, and you hit on it early with David Johnson, they didn't need him, and honestly, I don't think if he starts the entire year that he's as effective as he is right now. I think the fact that he was able to be worked in slowly throughout the year in different roles, in different different situations, has allowed him to really flourish as, the quote-unquote starter, the feature back now. And we're kind of seeing the Arians offense come to fruition in its best, what it is now that he has a true every-down back, something he hasn't really had in Arizona the entire time. He's had flashes and games with it, but for 2 games now, or 3 games now, sorry, they've had an every down back in David Johnson that's getting that, 70% of the carries and the work, and is an option out of the backfield where, they don't really have to have a running back that comes off the field. And that's something that Arians wants, and that's what he had in Pittsburgh, and that's what he tried to have here with Rashard Mendenhall and Andre Ellington. And then I think he realized, okay, I got to use 2 guys to kind of get what I need, and Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington, and then both of them end up dinged up. And now you have David Johnson, who has, some of the better qualities of both those guys, but has a little, different ability as well. And now, you're seeing the offense come to a complete fruition where they can be unstoppable throughout a 60-minute game.
And with Johnson, for me, if you want to take a look at what he does, to me, he's a healthy mix of both Beanie Wells and Andre Ellington, because Beanie was really quite good. He not good feet overall, but he could go through people and he could push people off him. When he was healthy, he was something to watch, and that was the issue with him. Ellington, the same way, if he stays healthy, he's got the speed and shiftiness, but Johnson kind of combines all of that, which is really exciting moving forward. Of course, There is, of course. I mean, and he's the type of guy we all like to get super excited about. Very few Cardinals draft picks in terms of running backs have done well past one or two seasons, even dating back to Johnny Johnson, who was a surprise in himself as a seventh rounder. He was a revelation his rookie year. He was pretty solid his second year, and either injuries or otherwise other effectiveness tend to go down the drain. And that's, can this guy keep it up? Well, we'll find out. But it's really to think that we have gone through three running backs who can be as effective as they have been in their career, and to really not miss a step. It's really what a treat this year, instead of having to, no offense to Kerwin Williams, rely on Kerwin Williams, like we did a season ago, to be able to go from Chris Johnson to Andre Ellington, out of David Johnson. Three running backs. And I saw an interesting tweet from Josina Anderson from ESPN, talking to some insider within the, I can't remember if it was the Cardinals organization. I think it was the Cardinals organization, is that, you know, had they wanted him to, he could have been a rookie of the year guy. He could have been rookie of the year had the Cardinals wanted him to, but because they had Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington, they didn't need him to. And it's just how stacked they were at the position this year, which is, you know, something we've never experienced ever. The closest thing was Beanie Hightower that we had for a couple years, and even then those were really good running attacks in which individually they weren't fantastic.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things about the whole rookie of the year conversation is, you know, when you look at Gurley and what he's done in St. Louis, he had that five-game stretch to start the season where he put up half his yards, basically. And then he kind of, I don't know if he hit the wall or the Rams just forgot that they had him, you know, or what happened. But I do wonder if this is as a rookie is sustainable, because how many rookies have we seen, you know,
flash in year one?
Well, and not just that, but you know, how many rookies have we seen? Let me look here. Green Bay obviously was kind of the opposite, but you know, St. Louis, Minnesota, and Philly in just carries. I mean, the guy had 68 carries in three games. And then he went down to 9 against Green Bay, and there's probably a reason for that, right? Like, there was probably a reason that they went down to 9 carries for him. Yeah, I know he had, I think he had 3 more catches or something like that, and you know, but there was probably a reason. It was probably because they don't want him to hit that rookie wall, you know, in start number 7, which would be the, you know,
middle
the championship
the playoffs.
Game.
Yeah, yeah.
If they make it there. So it kind of, you know, I understand the, oh, if you put up, you know, if you give David Johnson the same amount of carries as Todd Gurley, these are his numbers, and then, you know, but that's something that we did, and by we, I mean me, with Andre Ellington. Well, if you do this with Andre Ellington, this
he
is
breaks.
What you're going to get.
But instead
and
you
then
do,
we,
and he breaks.
Yeah, and so it's that straw man argument where you can't really prove it, so you're not wrong. So we can argue it, and nothing, you know, is wrong. But in reality, I think there's a reason that they only gave him 9 carries this week, because he was coming off, you know, basically 22, 23 a game the last 3 games before that. And now he's, you know, they're going to try to probably, you know, lay off a little bit this week, maybe not fully, but, you know, their big picture is so much bigger than what the fans are right now, and that's not a shot at the fans or anything, but their big picture, their only, you know, goal for this season is to win a Super Bowl, and David Johnson's going to be a very important part of that, because as we've seen with David Johnson, you know, and as we've talked about, this offense is something special when they are able to utilize him. And even against Green Bay, where he wasn't utilized a lot,
He still has the ability to make dynamic plays when he gets the ball in his hands. And so that's, I think, what you're going to kind of see going forward.
Another thing that stands out for me is the manner in which that they have begun to win. And if you look at the arc of this season, it has really sort of been perfect. If you could, while not undefeated, it's been a perfect season in terms of setting yourself up for the postseason. They get off to an incredible start to the season. They really start blowing people out of the water, where they give themselves the belief, yeah, we can beat anyone. Look at that. We are putting beatdowns on bad teams. But then they had a little bit of adversity. And in fact, that adversity, you know, the loss to the Rams was a case, is no one stopped them. They had problems themselves. It was a perfect game plan by St. Louis, as we've talked about. And even still, it was a couple of missed plays from a win. Then the Landry Jones issue, a player they had not prepared for. They didn't have any film on. They were unable to make adjustments. So they had a couple of games in which there was adversity and they couldn't make it through it. Then they get down to a Browns team, flip the switch, and then overcome that. Then they have a series of games in which they dominate early, they falter, and win the game late or put the game away late. And now as we hit the end of the season, now again, these are against quality opponents. And then, you know, you see a boring win against San Francisco. You see a dominating win with the Rams. Then you see the dominating of Philadelphia and the dominating of Green Bay. And you really see a team that is tuning itself up for a belief that no one can beat them. It doesn't matter what happens. They can really just, we're going to beat you no matter how it is. We're just going to keep scoring points. We're going to stop you. But we've talked about Cardinals peaking too early. They're peaking perfectly. We thought they peaked early. Then they hit adversity. They got the clutch wins, and now they're blowing people out of the water again. It's fantastic to see. And all that's left, I think, is in week 17. If there's anything we could write perfectly, would be to have them gut out, or even a dominating performance on Sunday would be fantastic, but to sort of stick the knife into the heart of the Seattle Seahawks and show them, no, you don't have a chance. We've beaten you at home. It wasn't a fluke. We beat you here on our turf when there was nothing to play for. Go home. Your time is done.
To a point, yeah. I mean, obviously this game is important for the potential first overall seed. But I more than that is the continuation of domination type thing, where you want to continue to feel like, you know, there's no one that can beat you. And I think it's important because, let's be honest, there's a good chance they're going to play Seattle again in the playoffs. And so you want that feeling of, okay, like, this isn't a team to fear anymore. This is a team that, you know, has to look up to Arizona as opposed to, you know, this is a team that Arizona is equal with, especially, you know, coming off of loss last week, where, you know, I'm sure there will be a lot of people, if the Cardinals were to lose, that would say, paint this as, oh, they didn't have anything to play for, or, you know, whatever. But they do. They have a lot to play for because
it's Seattle.
They're able to, well, not just that, but if they're able to win, that puts Seattle at the 6th seed, I believe, even with the
potentially. Depends on what happens with Green Bay, Minnesota.
But, and, you know, what that does is that, you know, just puts you avoiding them a little bit longer. It's not that you want to avoid them, but, again, you know, if you lose to Seattle this week, and then you have to turn around and play Seattle in round 2 of the playoffs in your first playoff game at home after you just lost to them in week 17 of the regular season, you know, there's probably a little more nervousness going on than if you were to, you know, beat them and then you get them in the NFC championship game. So, already beat this team twice. I mean, let's go, you know. So, I think it's going to say a lot, and I, you know,
I'm on the bandwagon of you let players play. You know, if the game gets out of hand one way or another, I always advocate pulling players. So, like, what they did this week against Green Bay, I was completely fine with. You know, but so, you know, that's all that really I can think of at this point. You know, when you have that conversation about what would you do? Do you rest the guys? I don't know. I mean, you can't play afraid in the NFL, and if you do, I saw a great analogy to the Final Destination movies. You know, that injury is going to find you if you try to hide from it. So, you know, do you want to be rusty coming out and having to face Seattle in the second round because you started Drew Stanton and, you know, Kerwin Williams and lost, and so now you have to face them in round two and they're riding high and believing in themselves? I don't know. I think what Aaron did is my call.
And actually, that was one of the topics we were going to get to, is we'll talk about this. So the whole notion of rest, there are a couple of ways to think about this. Seattle's physical. Carson, we really got a couple of players that are really are basically indispensable. One is Carson Palmer. I think their second one is Patrick Peterson. And then to a lesser extent, on all but still much important, Jared Verdier. You've kind of got three of your quarterback, your left tackle, your left tackle, and your shutdown corner. They don't really have a pass rusher that you can say you want to sit because they need those guys out there. Maybe Calais Campbell, but we've seen them win without Calais. At the same time, I mean, Palmer is at kind of the center of that. Peterson, secondly, Veldier, they could weather sort of maybe depending on who the matchup is. But at the same time, they're already going to get a rest. And you don't, we've talked about it before, you don't want them to sit without having 2 weeks of insignificant or no football to play for. These are competitors. And I think psychologically, we kind of brought it up, don't rest them until the game is in hand in the second half. Definitely go into it at least as a second preseason, even a third preseason game where they're going to play into the second half. Then you're going to play it by ear. If it's close, keep it going. But you don't want to, in the football mind, you don't want to shut it down. And you don't want to disrespect the other team you might be facing again and to have them take that as a slight and have something extra to play for. Oh, we're not important enough. Plus the fact that that's an NFC West team. We mentioned the cycle. You want to psychologically put it in your mind that there is no beating us. There's no chance to it. So get it out of your mind. The division is the Cardinals. This is now Arizona's division. I think really the only way to do this is play your guys. It would have been, you know, I would love for them to go with Matt Barkley at quarterback this week, honestly, and at one level. Had Carolina already won, I would have loved in some ways to say, okay, it's Barkley's turn, and have him go up there and try to win. But the more and more I think about it, you have to play the guys. You have to keep it rolling. Bruce Arians has always said, no risk and no biscuit, and this is what it is. You can't get the biscuit without the risk. He's throwing on third and two down the field. He's throwing deep when they're first and 30, first and 99 from the 1 yard line. And yep, you play Carson Palmer. He wants to play. You never know if which snap is going to be his last one. So go ahead and keep it going.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And you can't play afraid to lose somebody, because I mean we all know already. Like the season hinges on Palmer. You know, you can talk about Peterson, and you know we'll get to the Matthew thing in a little bit, but I mean it all hinges on Palmer. So I mean, when you wrapped up a playoff spot, should you have put him in bubble wrap and just sat him on the sideline and said, "Don't throw, don't do anything until this is till the playoffs start"? I mean, I just
I think the only time you consider that is if he's banged up. So if you've got, like, you know, if he's got a lingering ankle issue, that's the one thing I'd say, okay, then if it's a questionable, then you err on the side of caution. But if he's healthy, play him. They need Rashawn Johnson back out there again for one more game. He's missed a couple games, so he needs to get back out there to kind of get that rhythm again.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, like I said, the continuation is important. The high that they're riding right now is important. And they've played at such a dominant pace the last 2 weeks. I mean, even going back to, I think, St. Louis, or Minnesota's, and they didn't play great, but they didn't play bad. But, you know, they've played so well the last 2 weeks, you don't really want to lose that momentum and kind of lose the, you know, swagger, so to speak. So getting out there and beating Seattle is just as important. But, you know, I guess the one flip side is if you go out there and you play all out, lose, that's a deflating loss. You know, I guess that is the one downside to it, the kind of, you know, letting the air out of the balloon, so to speak. But, you know, if you truly are the best team in the NFL and you truly believe that you're better than every team in the NFL, then, you know, it shouldn't even really be a question in my mind.
And I love the notion of Seattle being limited to 9 wins. That seemed absurd when they started getting on their run. And tell me, do the Rams confuse you too? Because they sure confuse me. They've only got 7 wins all year, and 3 of them come against the Cardinals and the Seahawks. And they have putrid quarter. I mean, I just don't understand that team because they're so beatable, yet they are just so pesky within the division. They might end up with the best division record. They might end up 5-1 in the division, honestly. That might probably will happen, in fact.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about them is they're kind of in, I'm trying to remember who the team was. They're kind of in the Seattle spot, right? A couple of years ago where when Pete Carroll took over and they had everything, but then they had Tavares Jackson as their quarterback. And they were a 7-9 or 8-8, something like that. You know, a quarterback in the NFL, as we've seen as Cardinals fans, a quarterback in the NFL makes all the difference. If they can figure that out some way, somehow, you know, maybe they're good. And maybe they're, you know, as good, you know, as the Cardinals or right there with the Cardinals. But I don't know. I mean, until you figure out the quarterback position, you really just have zero chances. I mean, outside of and you have to play in a bad division, so I mean, we're even seeing, you know, Denver come back down to earth with Brock Osweiler and his growing pains, and obviously Cincy and AJ McCarron. You know, you take teams that look like Super Bowl contenders and insert a quarterback that, you know, maybe even average, and all of a sudden they're just not very good, you know, or not as good and not as dominant. So I, you know, outside of Pittsburgh, St. Louis is the other team that I just can't figure out this year because, you know, Pittsburgh lost to Baltimore yesterday, and they were healthy, or 2 days ago. So, yeah, the NFL doesn't make any sense. We've talked about this before.
It does not. Football is dumb. Football is dumb like that. But something we didn't talk about at all, and really the most, I think it was the funnest part of Sunday. The pass rush, 9 sacks and a 10th if Jerod Powers doesn't, you know, hit Aaron Rodgers in the helmet, which he didn't even need to because Alex Okafor already had him wrapped up and coming down. 9 sacks, and that's impressive. But at the same time, if you look at it, they should have done that because Green Bay's line was decimated. To see Dwight Freeney get 3 sacks, that's exactly what you wanted to see when he was lining up against a backup left tackle. But my goodness, that was fun. And how, if they can somehow develop a pass rush, just how scary good is this Cardinals team going to be in the playoffs?
Well, more about it, and, you know, that's the one
that's the one key ingredient, and that can make good teams look bad, and you know, not maybe not bad teams, but teams that you look line up and say, well, the Cardinals are better at all these positions except pass rush. Well, we've seen in throughout NFL history, pass rush is the great equalizer. Seattle 2 years ago against Denver, obviously the Giants twice against the Patriots. I mean, I don't. Maybe Seattle was a better overall team than Denver, but I don't know. I don't think they were that much better. I mean, they were definitely not 48 to whatever the final score was better. And I don't think you'll find very many people that would say that New York was a better, you know, overall team than the Patriots in either Super Bowl. But when you have a pass rush, when you have the ability to win with four guys, drop seven guys into coverage, and get, you know, that's a great equalizer. And there's certain teams that have that. You know, Seattle's been one this year, and Denver and Cincinnati. And New England's gotten there, too, quite a bit. So, you know, and this week, kind of saw it with the Cardinals. Like, yeah, they blitzed quite a bit. I think I read it was, like, still, when the starters were all in, I think it was still up around 60% of the time they were still blitzing or something like that. But, I mean, they were getting to the quarterback, and, you know, the best play against Aaron Rodgers is not pressure. It's making sure he doesn't throw the football. And that's what, you know, that's what happened nine times in the game. And, you know, those nine plays were, you know, bigger than any, you know, pressure or, you know, whatever other stat you want to create to gauge or to create the idea that your pass rusher is playing well when he's not getting sacks. So I thought, you know, Calais has really turned it on the last couple of weeks, and clearly Dwight Freeney, you know, in situational rushing is still very good.
Now, one thing we didn't get to talk about because it happened while we were doing our holiday things and I was out of town and this and that, but we missed talking about the loss of Tyrann Mathieu. What a sick, sick thing to happen with the season to happen, and to come in is such a play as it was. It wasn't like that his last knee injury where, you know, he was kind of not intelligently playing football and trying to make more and getting upended and his knee getting crushed. He just caught an interception, planted to run, and his knee died. And that, he's such an important player. But if you look at where the Cardinals are, they've got depth. And even though they're kind of out of depth at defensive back, you see guys like DJ Swearinger fill in and play ably. You've got Jerrod Powers who comes. So they've got guys that can replace him. It's just not quite as dynamically. But I don't think their defense loses much overall. I don't think. You know, a couple of ticks down in a couple of areas because Powers is not nearly as dynamic in coverage, nor is he as good a blitzer. He's a good tackler. Swearinger, obviously, isn't quite. And Tony Jefferson, they're not quite the safety that Mathieu is. But then again, they also offer more size than he does. So, you know, after the initial, like, just sick to your stomach feeling, when you see a guy who's worked so hard and is playing so well to see a season end again on a play like that, you still feel like the Cardinals are in really good shape.
Well, I think we're going to see more this week than last week, because even though Aaron Rodgers is, you know, a great quarterback, I think the fact that his offensive line was terrible hurt him immensely, and then, you know, his wide receivers have been really bad this year too. So I think we'll see a little more this week with the Seahawks and Doug Baldwin, and I don't know if Tyler Lockett's playing. I gotta look that up. I thought I heard somewhere that he got hurt during the game, so I'll have to look. But and I think we'll see more, you know, in the playoffs. I think this team and I tweeted that out on Sunday, this defense plays really, really well when they're playing ahead. They play at a very high level. So, you know, I think you have to, you want to see it if they're having to get stops against a team that's you know, playing well and driving, and obviously, I think a team that's a little more balanced, like what Green Bay has been this year. But, you know, it's hard for me to say that they're not going to miss him because of his versatility more than anything. You know, we saw Justin Bethel, I don't know if you would say he struggled in the game, Pro Football Focus, that he was the worst cornerback in the NFL on Sunday, so I don't know. I didn't think he was that bad. I thought he clearly had struggles. I don't think he was that bad. So we'll see what happens, I guess. I mean, obviously, it didn't hurt him this week, so it's a hard thing to gauge at this point.
And, you know, I think the underrated thing about all of this is, well, one, having a guy like Rashad Johnson back there is so good for everyone. But to see that Tony Jefferson and DJ Swearinger could get the job done as well, that's really good to see. And moving forward, the downside, the part that hurts me the most, that makes me the most sad, is not because of the football, but it's because of when the timing of it, because he was due, and is the plan was to sign him to a massive contract extension. I don't know if that will still be the plan or if he loses some money as a result, but that sickens me when it comes to NFL players. I mean, Carson Palmer was lucky a year ago. He tore his ACL days afterwards. This is the second time it's happened, but injuries like that, and he's going to be the type of player that will fight back from and come back at a high level, but you know, two torn ACLs, that's crushing for a skilled player.
And I read somewhere, I read somewhere how devastating the ACL injury is, or the second ACL injury is for a defensive package, and how much that is going to really affect play. You know, obviously you don't want to speculate. We have no idea. And he came back so strong and so dominant, you know, in his second year back from ACL, his first time. But, yeah, I mean, it's sad. It's disappointing. And I think, like you said, it's one of those situations where you feel bad because the kid had worked so hard, he was playing at such a high level, and he was about to earn such a huge payday. So maybe the payday's the same per year, but less in years. Maybe, you know, maybe he only gets a 2-year, $27 million, $28 million deal with, you know, half of that guaranteed, something like that, instead of the 5-year, $60 million, you know, or $75 million deal he's probably going to get. So, you know, you hurt for him in that sense because he overcome so much in his personal life to get here, and now, you know, he keeps getting knocked down. So you just want to see him get up again, but you also want to see him be the same player. You know, we talked about it way, I don't remember, 5-6 weeks ago, but we talked about it, and that was the question that I had was, is he Troy Polamalu, who got away with, you know, being that reckless, kind of crazy man on the field, or was he Bob Sanders? And right now, it looks like Bob Sanders. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, we're still talking about a guy who had numerous Pro Bowls and an All-Pro.
He was a defensive player of the year, wasn't he?
Yeah. And so, but lost out on probably what would have been a Hall of Fame career because he was always injured. And so you hate to see that possibility that might be, you know, what happens with Tyran, because this is, you know, it's been three different injuries in 3 years, and that's just one of those unfortunate things. But
you know, to go back to your point, I don't know how much it'll hurt. I think we'll learn more this week than we did last week. But I don't think you can really say how much it hurts until it hurts. You know what I mean? Like, you can't really say, oh, well, you know, they really missed Tyran until they actually miss him.
And I'm just, I mean, I think the part that's the most difficult is the fact that he's now missing out on the postseason. It's going to be soon he's going to go into surgery. He's with the team right now, but he's going to have a surgery, and he's going to miss out on the playoff atmosphere. He's going to miss out on that national stage. Now, he's done really well in the national stage thus far on national TV to have those postseason moments that you have. Like we think that Carson Palmer and Michael Floyd are going to have, and that Dwight Freeney's going to have. You have those reputation in it. That basically, if you look at Larry Fitzgerald's career, that's what made Larry Fitzgerald Larry Fitzgerald. It's what made him a star. He was already a big name in terms of production, but that postseason was magical. And his career has been defined by that across the league because of that. Patrick Peterson, Tyrann Mathieu, Calais Campbell now have their chance to do that, and Matthew's going to miss it.
Yeah, he is. And Matthew, you obviously feel quite emotional. And just hope that he can overcome it and, you know, be the great player again that he has been.
Let's look forward to the playoffs. Now, obviously, Cardinals at this point, should we consider the Cardinals as, like, the team to beat in the NFL? Vegas now has the Cardinals and the Patriots as the top bet when it comes to the Super Bowl at 3-1. Is there a team, should there be another team in the NFC or even the NFL that we should look at and say, ooh, I'm not sure, you know, and fear? You look at Carolina, they got beat by Atlanta. You look at Seattle, they were on a roll, but the Arizona's already beat them, and they were swept by the Rams. You look at Washington. Is Washington a team that we need to worry about a little bit? Minnesota and Green Bay. Minnesota played Arizona very tough. Green Bay, they still got Aaron Rodgers, but everything's going to happen at home except for Carolina. Is there a team that you would like, if there is a team that you are looking forward the least to play, who would that team be?
I think in the NFC, it's still Seattle. Even if they beat them twice, I still think it's hard to beat a team three times, first off, but second, like I said, the pass rush is the thing that Seattle has that has to scare you. Obviously Minnesota is a good team and they can't hang with Arizona. They've already proven it. You know, you hit on Green Bay. They have Aaron Rodgers still. And then we haven't even seen the Cardinals versus Carolina yet. So who knows what kind of chess match that would be, especially with their, you know, dominant defense. But, you know, the NFC, I still think it's Seattle. The NFC is a whole different animal because there's so many injuries right now. You know, I don't know what to make of Denver. I think that they're the best team in the NFL outside of quarterback. And so I think that is, you know, a huge question mark for them. Obviously, New England with Belichick and Brady are always, you know, they're not dead until they're, you know, dead. And then I still like Cincinnati if they get Andy Dalton back. So it's just, you know, it's going to be, and you can't sleep on Kansas City and what they've done because they do have so much talent on defense as well. So I think personally I'm more concerned about teams in the AFC, but I think there are good enough teams in the NFC that the Cardinals should, you know, you shouldn't crown them yet. So.
And that's how I look at the Cardinals now. I consider them the team to beat. You know, you look at, no one has stopped them offensively. No one has. Even the first St. Louis game, Arizona moved the ball at will. against against Pittsburgh, that first half, they were completely dumb. They just weren't finishing drives. So that Carolina defense doesn't scare me nearly as much as it could. Cam Newton's a great equalizer, but if you look at the fact that they really don't have anyone that is going to be, they got Greg Olsen, but look at the secondary. Cam Newton is going to have to, he's going to struggle. I mean, he's going to struggle in the passing offense. I like how the Cardinals match up against Carolina. Seattle, I think, is going to be the big test again, like you mentioned. And you look at the AFC, you know, the thing about Green Bay, and not the thing about the New England, rather, that scares me, isn't their defense. It isn't anything. It's Rob Gronkowski, because that they have their biggest weapon, what makes them special offensively, is a position where the Cardinals have done okay at. And he is such a matchup nightmare. It's really the only team. I at this point, I think the Cardinals are the team to beat, especially in NFC, and it will be anything less than the making of the Super Bowl, I think, is now a disappointment. For me, the expectation has been ratcheted up. Okay, postseason. Okay, now win the division. Okay, this team should get a bye with the season they're having. Now, they need to get to that Super Bowl. You get to the Super Bowl, anything happens. The team that actually still scares me the most is Pittsburgh. In the AFC, and they might not even make it. But that passing offense, we saw them, we saw Landry Jones and Martavis Bryant go crazy on them. The Cardinals cover teams well, but when you've got the trio that Pittsburgh has, if they have Ben Roethlisberger, that would be a scary game. I think they are the scariest opponent for me of anyone else in the NFL.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see if, you know, obviously they have to make the playoffs. Like I said, Denver worries me because their defense is so similarly, you know, with Carolina. Anytime you have a good defense, I feel like we've seen enough times in the playoffs, especially in the Super Bowl, we've seen, you know, good defenses really trump even great offenses. I know, like I said, the Giants over the Patriots, people forget about how good the Oakland Raiders offense was that got just destroyed by the Buccaneers. The Baltimore Ravens over a very good New York Giants offense. You know, so that's why, you know, Seattle against Denver a couple years ago. So that's the one, you know, I always worry about teams with great defenses, and I think they're going to be, you know, three in the NFC or in the AFC, and then there's the two in the NFC that, you know, we'll see what happens. But you give a defensive mind, you know, 2 weeks to figure out an offense. I think we're at the point, and you kind of hit it when you said that they're the proverbial favorite right now. I think we're at the point where, you know, and you and I have talked about this before personally, if they don't make it to the Super Bowl, this is a disappointing season, right? Like, there's no silver lining.
No,
there's no,
not at all.
There's no, oh, you know, they were right there at the end. No, I mean, you're either a Super Bowl team or not. That kind of, there's a running clock on Carson Palmer, you know, and where he, you know, can get this team, and you never know with the 36-year-old when that you know, timer's going to go off, so to speak. So that's, you know, I think if they're not in the Super Bowl this year, you know, it's not over, and they could be back next year. But I think you have to be.
It's a disappointment
overall,
because they already they wasted last year on Ryan Lindley. And I love Ryan Lindley as a kid, as a person, as a human being, and as an NFL player, but that team was a Super Bowl team in my mind, and then they was lost because Carson Palmer went down and Drew Stanton down. So we went to the playoffs with Ryan Lindley. That was like the Phoenix Suns Nash getting hurt year. That was the Phoenix Suns Joe Johnson getting lost in the playoffs problem. they need to make it to the Super Bowl. We need that. That even if they lose in the Super Bowl again, because there's no guarantee. I mean, going to the Super Bowl is what they need. I'm not going to be disappointed if they don't win the championship, but if they make it to the Super Bowl, this season is satisfying. This is that Cardinal. This is the Suns 92-93 season. That's the season the Cardinals are having, and they have to make it to the Super Bowl at this point.
Yeah, and like you said, if they don't, you know, you don't want to say it's a wasted season or anything like that, but it's definitely
unfulfilled.
Unfulfilled and disappointed, and you know, and they're going to be the first ones to tell you how disappointed they are by the season if they don't win the Super Bowl. So,
and well, there we have it, Cardinals fans. We've come to an end of another Revenge of the Birds radio episode, our All Cardinals show, and guess what? This time, the plan is we'll be talking about a 14-2 Cardinals. They have an outside chance of the number one seed. They got to beat Seattle. Carolina's got to lose to Tampa. Could happen. I mean, Atlanta did beat them, but we could be talking about the number one seed Arizona Cardinals, 14-2. We're going to be talking about Cardinals and their season next week, as we'll be on a playoff bye. There will be no Cardinals football next week, so we will talk about the regular season, looking forward to the playoffs. Seth, thanks for coming on again. We're at the end of this, so thanks for listening, Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of Birds Radio. I'm Jess Root. That's Seth Cox. Have a good one. Talk to you next week.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.